Can you tell me the general outlines of your life leading up to 1950? Like, where were you born, where you lived, and so on?
Certainly. Well, I was born here in Hillsboro on the 18th of May, 1927. And I grew up and was raised here. Went to school, went to Hillsboro High School. I enlisted in the U.S. Navy at age 17 during my senior year. I returned after being discharged, came back and immediately enrolled at the University of Oregon. And I was at the University of Oregon at the time that the Korean War broke out.
So your situation during 1950 and 1953 during the Korean War was?
I was a student. I graduated in the class of 1951 and then returned to Hillsboro to work here at the newspaper.
Oh, at the Argus?
Yes.
Okay. And in general, what was the Hillsboro community like in the early 1950s?
Well, it was a community that was recovering from all of this upheaval of World War II. The people were coming back from the war, going to school, getting married, raising children. The community was probably at that time, I'm going to guess, about 5,000-6,000 people. And it was a relatively quiet time. People thought that probably we'd seen the last of war, and we could look forward to years and years of peace.
Was there one event that stands out in your mind about the early 50s?
Well, of course, the Korean War. I was at the University of Oregon. In fact, I was going to summer school at the time. I was living with four other young men, all of whom were veterans of World War II. And we learned about the North Korean invasion while we were preparing dinner on the night, I believe it was the 25th of June, I think was the date that the invasion took place.
Do you recall having any single particular reaction to the outbreak of war in Korea? And how it would affect you on the people around you?
Well, yes. A lot of my peers had stayed in the military reserves, and of course they were called up pretty soon. I was not, because I didn't affiliate with the reserve program, although I did later on. We felt that we were probably going to be involved in a Third World War. That's what we thought probably would happen.
And to this, what was your attitude toward the government in those, during this time? Did you think that most people shared your views towards the government and how you felt this war was started? Or
well, we in those days we had a lot more confidence in our government than we subsequently have. We recognized, as did my peers, that we had a job to do, and that maybe we didn't get things finished at the end of World War II. I know a lot of people felt that we should have, General Patton should have kept right on going and right into the Soviet Union while we were at the peak of our strength, and we had the military and the weapons to do that.
At the current state, when the United States relation with Russia and to stop to contain the spirit of communism. Mm-hmm. Did you have any feelings of relationship towards that and the war itself? Of being just a branch off of this relationship?
Yeah, we felt it was a just another offshoot of the war that wasn't finished. And of course, there were a lot of things that led to that. The division of Korea at the 48th parallel was a result of World War II, and then of course our government in January of 50 determined that Korea was outside of our defense perimeter, which I think was a horrible mistake at the time, and probably is what resulted in the Korean War.
Did you feel like during this, did you have any particular feelings towards communism, or how it might affect you, or any fears towards this, just a general area?
Well, I think most everyone had a fear of communism. We knew what had happened to the civilian population in the Soviet Union back in the 20s and 30s. Very, very repressive government. Lives weren't really meant an awful lot to the communists. They were just power hungry.
Was there any do you recall anything about issues here about the flybys and the plane watches?
Yeah, when I got back to the Hillsborough for out of college, I became an aircraft observer. Mm-hmm. The public was very concerned about the future.
Did you have any experiences as an air watcher? Like what was going through your mind while you were like?
Well, what was going through my mind was when I was up in the observation tower looking for aircraft, I just kept hoping I never saw any. But of course, we were identifying everything.
Can you recall how this began? This air watch?
Well, we had it in place during World War II, and I remember as far as the time frame is concerned, but they just started it up again when it appeared that we were going to have problems with international communism.
And this was at Thomas High School?
It's Thomas now, yeah.
Yeah, and was there there was the whole community take part in this?
Let me step back just a minute. There was a tower at on the grounds of the old B.W. Barnes School, and somewhere along that location was moved from there to the Hill High Field. I think it was in the press box. I can picture here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It moved to this press box here. Mm-hmm. on the football field.
Okay. Were there any positive aspects of the Cold War?
Well, I think it sent a message that the United States would not stand for communist expansion into the free world. Or what was known as the free world at that time.
Do you recall any patriotic observances during this time?
Yes, we had three major events: 4th of July, when I came home from university. I affiliated with the American Legion Drum and Bugle Corps, which was very good in those days, and we marched in all the parades, the 4th of July parade, the Armistice Day parade, which is now Veterans Day, and the Decoration Day. We participated in all those things. We had patriotic speakers, I can't remember exactly which ones, but I think I recall that Armistice Day was the speakers were at the old Venetian Theater following the parade. Patriotic speaker at the 4th of July spoke at the at Chute Park around the flagpole. And Decoration Day, Memorial Day now, there were always observances at the cemeteries. And our VFW, an American Legion, and our Government Bugle Corps participated in all of these. So the turnout was good. People were very patriotic in those days, and it was. I think the peak of patriotism was realized during World War II, when there was no question about the solidity of the American people in fighting the Axis powers.
And how, like, the patriotic rose during World War II? You saw during World War II?
Yes.
How patriotism rose and
yes.
kind of died down afterwards, and then with the beginning of the Korean War, did you see any, like, revival of this?
Oh, yes.
But
I don't think we really even lost an awful lot of that between the two wars, because one came on just 45, 50, just 5 years later. Wasn't all that long a time between the two wars.
Can you kind of tell me how, like, the Korean War was embraced, kind of, to, like, the community or to you personally?
Well, it was not the great crusade that we had in World War II, but certainly people backed the troops, backed the country, although there were some divisions. A lot of politicians thought we should not be doing what we were doing, and a lot of politicians felt that we should do more than we did. There was a faction in the Congress that felt that we should unleash our nuclear weapons and win the war. There's a lot of dissatisfaction over the fact that the Korean War, as they say, was the first war that America was not allowed to win. And I suppose maybe a lot of dissatisfaction over the fact that we let the United Nations run our foreign policy in those days.
Talk about patriotism and, like, the Korean War. You were being involved with the Argus. Did this have any impact on the community of what was published during this time in the Argus to the people? Was there any, like?
Well, that's kind of a hard question to answer for me, because it's kind of like being in the middle of the forest, and the job that we did, we just reported what was going on. I don't remember what our exactly what our editorial policy was in those days, but I know that we were solidly behind our country and the war effort. But we didn't have during the Korean War, we didn't have the rationing and the widespread mobilization that we had in World War II. It was just more of a, they called it a police action, even though over 50,000 of our young men and and women were killed in the war. I think that in hindsight, we have always, as a country, never really been fully prepared for anything that international trouble, with the possible exception of the Gulf War. We had a very fine military at that time, but after World War II, after World War I, after World War II, and before, we were never really prepared militarily. And many of our soldiers, sailors, and airmen, Marines, lost their lives because we had inferior equipment, inferior training, and thank God in those days we had oceans between us and our enemies, which we don't have now, with missiles and things like that. So we don't have the time to mobilize that we had in years past. I guess that probably would. But I think we were ill prepared going into World War II. We certainly were ill prepared going into the Korean War, because the troops that we had to throw in to South Korea were occupation troops, and they were very poorly trained. They were not ready for combat.
Going back to the watchtowers,
mm-hmm.
and how you kind of just talked about how there was an ocean between you, but now that there were missiles,
mm-hmm.
how that kind of closes the gap.
Yes.
Was there any fear in like the Hillsborough area, in the community, of these missiles, of them being endangered?
Well, yes, and that's something that everyone was pretty frightened when we learned that the Soviets had acquired nuclear weapons, and we felt that they were prepared to use them. Later on, I think I mentioned earlier in the interview that I had reaffiliated later on with the Naval Reserve, and I was called active duty in 1961, I believe it was, and participated in a fallout shelter survey, mm-hmm. for Navy Bureau of Yards and Docks and the Army Corps of Engineers, and our job was to survey the states of Oregon and Washington, identifying potential fallout shelter sites for the population. I mean big sites, you know, mm-hmm. caves and buildings and things like that. Supplied them with food and water.
Can you describe to me the purpose and what the fallout shelter was?
Yeah, well, there were I was not involved in the home shelter program, but there were a lot of people who built backyard bomb shelters, mm-hmm. and but that was not the area that I was involved in. This was the big stuff for the cities, basically, for the sheer survivability of our city populations.
And how did you prepare these large fallout shelters?
Well, what we did, we didn't actually do that ourselves. We were the directive, and we went about calling on mayors, governors, county commissions, sheriffs, anyone involved with public safety. We toured the state of Washington, We didn't come down into the state of Oregon because that was handled by really by the Corps of Engineers. But the actual survey work was hired by engineering firms contracted by the Navy.
And these shelters were for like the cities and just in case of a bombing?
Yes.
Okay. About the Korean War, to what extent were you aware of what was happening in Korea during this time?
Well, I was very aware because I was a history major and a journalism, or a history minor and a journalism major, and so what's going on in the world, I read all the newspapers, and listened to the radio stations, so I was pretty aware of what was happening. I think most people were.
Can you recall any events of the Korean War that happened in Korea which had an impact to you personally? Or
I would have to say that personally, no. I lost some friends, but as far as there was very little, there was no inconvenience really to the civilian population. Because we were really fighting that war with one hand behind our back. There was not a definite all-out effort to win that war.
And concerning this area or the area you were in at the time,
mm-hmm.
was there any? Did you have any? Did you know anything about the draft? For the draft during for the Korean War, was there a draft?
There was a draft, yes.
And did it, did it affect you or anyone?
It didn't. Anyone who was a veteran of World War II was exempt from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So the draft was never a consideration to me. As I said, when I went in the military, I enlisted.
Okay. Did you know anyone who fought in the Korean War?
Well, gosh, I knew a lot of people, but you ask me to name them now, I couldn't do that. You know, it's been a long, long time ago. The war ended in 1947, and I'm 73 now, so the memory gets a little hazy.
What do you feel was the reason for the United States fighting the Korean War?
To contain communism. And the big error we made, as I said, was when the Truman administration declared that Korea was outside our defense perimeter. Well, it turns out that it wasn't. And communists were really very aggressively on the march throughout the world. Any vacuum that existed, they were in there to fill, and that's what happened in Korea. The communists built up a pretty potent war machine in North Korea, and the South Koreans, sure, they had military, but it was no match for the North Koreans. It was pretty brutal.
So even here, not being in the Korea, you could see the difference in power between the North and South.
Well, it was obvious by the military outcome. Sure,
yeah.
The North Koreans just went through the South a knife through hot butter.
The North, you saw the North, how they were supplied weapons and vehicles of war
mm-hmm.
from Russia,
mm-hmm.
communists.
Mm-hmm.
And the South
Russia
support,
and China.
Yes, the South supported by
United
the U.S.
States. Yes.
And how we didn't supply them any of these. Do you have any feelings of, do you think we should have?
Well, I think we were very naive. I think that we didn't think that anything would happen there. And I think it was wishful thinking and a lot of naivety on our part.
And concerning the war and the impact it had on the community, do you recall anything about like blood drives?
Yes, blood drives, we had blood drives. But then we've always had blood drives too. I mean, we're still having them today. But not to the extent that we did in those days. There was always, Red Cross was coming out here on a pretty regular basis and conducting blood drives. I think I was a 5-gallon donor at one time, and then I decided I couldn't give blood. Well, actually, no, I became a walking donor because I had kind of a weird blood type, so I didn't participate in the drives anymore. I was on call.
Just like community-wise, were there just like prices on like goods and just anything in general? Is there any like, did you see a difference like prices or costs?
Okay, well, there were a lot of shortages from left over from World War II, and prices were, of course, were higher than they had been, but I don't really recall of any real serious inflationary problems at that time, but I could be mistaken. I was young enough then that didn't mean an awful lot to me. Inflation, that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm. How would you compare the home front in World War II to the home front in the Korean War?
World War II, they'd be hard to compare because World War II was a total effort, total mobilization, total effort, and that was not the case in Korea. So Korea was, unfortunately, was more or less one of those things over here, you know, and that unless you had a family or members of your family actually involved in the military, there was no great concern other than, of course, the concern of the threat of international communism.
Recalling veterans of the Korean War, was there how were the veterans of the war received as they returned home? Do you recall any?
Well, they were not received with the vigor that the victorious military received when they returned from World War II. But they were greeted and welcomed home, and they certainly didn't get the treatment that that the veterans of the Vietnam War received when they came home.
And back to the Cold War, concerning the Cold War.
Sure.
Did you fear any like nuclear attacks, the war, or maybe a war outbreak with Russia?
Yes, that was very much a consideration, I think, in most everyone's mind, unless they were out to lunch.
Did you have any knowledge of any? Did the general public have like the knowledge, or like the know-how, the know of what the nuclear weapon was?
Oh yeah.
And the effects of it.
Yes. The public was well aware.
And they took, and knowing of like the air watches and the bomb shelters,
yes.
Was there like a sense of nuclear weapon coming down from Russia?
Well, also what happened in those days, which certainly had an influence, I think, on the young people. I can remember pictures in the newspapers and the newsreels of children in school. Getting under their desks and their hands over their heads and shielding their eyes and things like that. So that certainly has to have an effect on the youngster.
Do you recall having any fear of radiation?
Yes, yes. Well, I personally did because, as I told you, when I was recalled active duty, I was given about 3 weeks to become an expert on nuclear warfare and the effects of radiation, also bacterial, ABC, atomic, bacterial, and chemical warfare. Those were all threats. And we received training in the military of steps to take to alleviate radiation, how to wash down our ships and things. It was a new area of training that the military had to go through at that time. Something we never worried about before.
Do you have any knowledge of what you got out of this? About learning about this radiation or any of these new...
I'm sorry.
You said you took a 3-week course of to learn what radiation was and become like a radiation expert.
Yeah. Because I had to know that when we went out on the on these trips that we took, explaining the need for these programs to establish fallout shelters and stock them.
And what kind of trips were these?
Pardon?
And what kind of trips were these?
Oh, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. That's when we went to see the sheriffs and the governors and the county commissioners and the chiefs of police of all these areas in the Northwest.
And was there any way you explained to them what you learned, like what you knew about radiation?
Well, there was a lot of feeling on the part of many people that what's the use? Why prepare? Because we're doomed. And one of our jobs was to convince the public that they weren't doomed, that there were precautions you could take. And I don't remember right now what the dosages were, but we were able to tell people, well, if you received a radiation dose of X number of Rankins, you can survive. You can get more than that, you're probably going to be dead. And if you get into a shelter, and the shelter, kind of like a sunscreen, you know, the shelters had protection factors, and depending on the protection factor, what was your prospect of survivability? And our objective was to have enough survivability among our people that we could continue to function in the event of a nuclear attack.
Were there also any precautions or any like rules taken for evacuation instead of bomb shelter?
We had evacuation routes. In retrospect, I think they were more to assure people that things would be okay. I can't vouch for the effectiveness of that at all.
Did you think that Portland itself was a target or a strategic target for nuclear war?
Well, there was a debate about that, and I guess I never had any strong feeling. I was always thinking, well, for my personal safety, where would I rather be? And I guess I thought that, well, maybe I'd rather be over on the coast because the prevailing westerly winds would always blow radiation and nuclear cloud away from the coast. But that's prevailing. Things change too, depending on the time of the year and the winds. But I always thought, boy, I'm going to head for the Oregon coast.
Were there any people? Were there any that shared that feeling?
I'm sure there were quite a few did. Yeah.
And for like the evacuation routes, so do you think they were the evacuation routes? Do you know where they were to, like the coast?
Just about any route that would take you away from the city. So on the west side, naturally, we would have headed to the coast. I can't recall now if you were on the east side of Portland. Certainly, you wouldn't have tried to come through Portland to go west. You'd have had to go someplace else. But I think we'd have had such a traffic mess there, it would have been untenable.
Were you aware of Senator Joseph McCarthy?
Yes, I was.
And what we now call the Red Scare.
Yes.
And what were your feelings about these events?
Well, I thought that McCarthy was too aggressive. I supported certainly what he was doing. He got a lot of criticism. He was not a popular person among the general population, and particularly a lot of people in the media took him to task. And now, as it turns out, from what we're learning from the Soviets, that these people that he had called on the carpet were indeed communists, members of the Communist Party, potential traitors. I think that what has come to light in the past 10 years probably vindicates McCarthy.
Were you aware of anyone being asked to take any like loyal oaths or anything?
No one that I knew personally. The only oaths that I ever had to take were my enlistment oaths when I went back in the military.
Did you hear of any? Or?
No, there were. I know that in there was a lot of uproar in the academic community. But I didn't know anyone personally that had to take the loyalty oath.
Were there any parts of the Cold War that the public took as kind of like a positive of being a part of the U.S., like as a free nation? Or
well, boy, I tell you, that's a tough question. Everyone was just hoping that war didn't break out.
Talking about McCarthy and his thing for like to find communism in government, and going back to the Korean War, did you have any feelings towards or like anyone or the public in general have any view towards MacArthur and his views in the leading the war and his conflicts with Truman?
That was very controversial situation when MacArthur was fired. There were a lot of us who felt that Truman should have allowed MacArthur to fight the war as he saw it, and Truman disagreed with MacArthur and fired him. Probably rightly so, in that the military is subservient to our civilian leadership under our form of democracy. There were a lot of people, however, who did not approve of the way that Truman was fighting the war and would have backed MacArthur. MacArthur also wanted to use nuclear weapons to put a radiation shield across the border with China up near the Yalu River, and that never happened. Probably a good thing it didn't, because who knows, you know, we start popping nukes and then what's going to happen to us? They'll pop us right back.
So you feel, how do you follow MacArthur's, MacArthur's way instead of Truman's?
Actually, in retrospect, of course hindsight's great. Today I would be more inclined to have gone Truman's way than MacArthur's way.
But back, compared to back then,
yeah,
during the time of the feeling.
A lot of things come up that you, because I think I mentioned that I'm kind of a history nut, and things are revealed years later that probably were classified, that were classified at the time. So until you have the advantage of all the things that were going on, it's when you have that, then you're better able to make a decision on what had happened, even though it was in hindsight.
Compared to like your views to the government, the war, and just like the situation in general back then, compared to like your views and just like relative feelings today, do you see any difference or changes?
Yes, I think that people today have very little confidence in government. I think that what has happened to the state of our military since the Gulf War is criminal. Today we could not fight a Gulf War with the military that we have today. The drawdown has been tremendous. The morale of our armed forces is in the tank, and I think that politicians now are more concerned with being reelected than they are for what's good for the country.
And how did you feel it was back then?
I think that there was some of that, but not to the degree that there is today. I think people still had pretty much had confidence in their government. I don't feel that that exists today.
Do you see any that locally, like the Hillsborough mayor of Oregon, right, the Hillsborough leaders? Do you see any differences from then and today? Just like the local leaders.
Well, yeah, because life is so much more complex today than it was then. We didn't have to worry about zoning. We didn't have to worry about population density. Our woods and forests were in pretty good shape. We weren't really. There were a lot of things that are very much of concern now that back in the 50s we didn't really have to worry about. Recycling, that's something we didn't. What's recycling? We didn't know what recycling was then.
So what did you feel like back then were like the main goals or just of life during the 50s, just the main outlook and concerns?
Well, the outlook of people of my generation were, raise our families and live in peace and I guess you'd say live happily ever after. I think that's what the goals were, to strive to do the best they can to provide a good education for our children, and hopefully they would grow up and share good lives and prepare the next generation for what's going on.
Just some miscellaneous questions.
Sure.
In what ways did the polio epidemic affect our area out here? Do you recall any?
I recall just a very few of my friends contracting polio, and I remember hoping that I sure as heck didn't get it. Yeah, that was. I don't remember when Julius Salk came up with his pill, but I think it must have been in the very early 50s. But as a child, we just knew of people who had contracted polio, and the attitude was, well, it won't happen to me, or it can't happen to me. It wasn't much of a concern.
And concerning information, how information was shared back and forth, what media did you usually go for information?
Newspapers.
Newspapers?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any certain one?
Well, let's see, sitting here, of course, our own newspaper, and I remember for years subscribing to the Christian Science Monitor, and the Oregonian and the Oregon Journal, and U.S. News and World Report, Time, Life.
Sorry. Considering all the media that you went to, did you see, like during the 50s and early 50s, like any of these like newspapers or journals having taken a major like centerfold on?
Yes, yeah. Every issue of the newspapers would report on the battle progress. We're talking about the Korean War now. Yeah. Oh yeah, that was. It got good coverage. Very, very, very deep coverage too.
Was there a difference from the types of reports from the Argus to the Oregonian, one being international and any other?
Well, yes. The Argus, of course, is a local paper, and we never tried to compete with the dailies because it wouldn't be a practical thing to do. So what we would report would be local people and what they were doing. And as far as the military is concerned, we would carry stories about what our local military people were doing, all sorts of things like where they were in training, when they got promoted, when they came home on leave. Some of them would be interviewed, but as far as carrying day-to-day reports of the battle, see, we were a weekly then, we're twice a week now, but we're just coming out one day a week, and there's no way that we could serve in that function of providing day-to-day news of the conduct of the war.
And may I ask how you got involved with the Argus?
It has been in my family since 1904. So my grandmother bought in 1904, and my father came in when he returned from France after World War I, went to Oregon State. Came back here and went into the business with my grandmother, and at one time there were four four generations of us working at the same time. No, I'm sorry, three generations of us at the same time. And so three generations of our family have been publishers of this newspaper. So I guess you'd just say I was born into it.
More like a family business.
Yeah, right.
Just as a closing, is there anything else you wanted to tell me that I haven't asked you?
I think you've done a very good interview, and probably as soon as you go out the door, I'll think of 100 things I would like to have said. But as of now, no, I think you've done a good job.
And thank you very much.
Yes, you bet.
For your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let me stop this.